Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And thank you so much for tuning in. As always, that is John Rauhaus playing in the background. We just last week had our big blowout 200th episode of the Fretboard Journal podcast. Thank you all so much for tuning into that big extravaganza. That was a ton of work to pull off. We had to go all the way to Austin, Texas, but it was well worth it. Now here we are at episode 201. That has no panache. We're not going to get any style points for episode 201. But stick with us, because in 2020, we're going to hit episode 300, and we have a long journey ahead of us. Until then, the best way to support the Fretboard Journal podcast, if you haven't yet, is to go to fretboardjournal.com and actually subscribe to our reader-supported magazine. That is what keeps the lights on here and allows us to travel more and interview more guests and do all the fun, free multimedia stuff we offer you guys. As always, our magazine is 128 pages with only about 15 pages of advertising, so pretty much the exact opposite of every other guitar magazine you've ever seen. Over 100 pages of just pure editorial with no ads interrupting your stories. And we go out and we interview our favorite musicians, our favorite luthiers, and our favorite historians, and take amazing world-class photographs of what they are up to. And if you have never seen the Fretboard Journal print magazine in person, I guarantee you will love it if you've been listening to this podcast. So you can go to fretboardjournal.com, use the coupon code podcast when you check out, and I will take $5 off your order. And you will get issue 42, which is being printed right now in just about 2 or 3 weeks, depending on where you live in the world. So please, if you haven't subscribed yet, we would love it if you would. It would mean the world to us. In the meantime, we have a great show today on the Fretboard Journal podcast with somebody who may not be on your radar, but hopefully will be. Hopefully you'll enjoy this conversation as much as I did. James A. Willis is a visual artist. He's a painter. He's a guitarist. He ran a multimedia company. And now, the feather in his LinkedIn cap, for some odd reason, he decided to start a podcast about the Fretboard Journal magazine. He is not on our payroll. I did not put him up to this. This was not some dare or bet that he lost. He did this out of the goodness of his own heart, and I wanted to hear all about why he did this. He is basically sitting down with some of his favorite people, most of whom are well-known musicians or great musicians in the Nashville area, and he's talking about the magazine, and he's talking about their career and their trajectory, and it is a fun show. It's called James A. Willis Reads the Fretboard Journal. And it is available on iTunes, as is our podcast. Now, James leads an interesting life. I can't exactly remember why I was in Nashville, but I met him many years ago, just as he had moved to Nashville at the Family Wash, via my dear friend Grant Johnson, who goes by the name Big Smokey and has actually written a couple articles for the Fretboard Journal over the years. He had just moved there from New York, James did, and he's a visual artist. He does these sort of like abstract landscape paintings, and he was just getting his foot in the door of Nashville. Since that time, many years ago, he has now been the artist in residence at Gibson Guitars. He's been doing a little work for Bedell Guitars. He's been doing these amazing painted guitar cases, which are available at Carter Vintage as well as other places. And he's just got this insane eye. I do not like art guitars at all. I am the last guy who will ever be interested in any of those guitars that are just meant for being hung up on a wall and cherished behind glass or at a Hard Rock Cafe. But James doesn't do those. You'll hear his process in this podcast, but if you want to see his work, you should check out his Instagram page, because he kind of showcases a lot of stuff there. And he also just seems like this insanely cool guy. So I feel like after this conversation, I need to get my ass to Nashville so I can hang out with him again and buy him a beer. In the meantime, our sponsor for this week's podcast is our friends over at Mass Street Music. Hopefully you know all about Jim Baggett. He was at our Fretboard Summits. He is a true authority when it comes to vintage instruments. Heck, he's on the Antiques Roadshow. It doesn't get more authoritative than that, appraising instruments all the time. Jim has a great store in Kansas, and he's been there for 35 years. As Mass Street Music, he has a team of full-time repairmen, and he's got this insane selection of great pre-war Martins, New Collings, Anderson Sirs, and many other boutique lines. Right now, they have a gorgeous Collings 290 DC in 1959 faded crimson. That's an absolutely gorgeous guitar with two Wolftone P90s. Someone should check that out. But check out everything Jim has, because it's just a great store. Go over to Mass Street Music. fretboardjournal.com, and you can tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you, and I'm sure they'd love to hear that the podcast plugs actually work once in a while. All right, we are going to get to our conversation with James A. Willis now. Again, he's the guy behind the James A. Willis Reads the Fretboard Journal podcast, something that he just kind of sprung into the world. I wasn't aware that it was coming, I'm really grateful he did. He's a few episodes into it. Check it out. Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast.
Hey, man. Thanks.
You've been, I've met you once, and then we've had a lot of correspondence, but you continue to be a mystery man. All I know is on Instagram, I see that Jeep of yours that looks like it's fully kitted out. Sometimes in Nashville, where I met you, sometimes in New York City, and then sometimes in where, Georgia?
Tybee Island. That's one of my other haunts. And then I'm from Bainbridge. It makes it to Bainbridge a few times a year. So
okay.
Bainbridge, Georgia.
So where do you officially live?
Well, that's a good question, and one that I've been asking myself this week. I think New York City is
okay.
Where I officially live, yeah. And although I will probably spend more time in Nashville. So I think I'd still like to say that New York City is where I officially live because, you know, it's where Monica and I have our proper house.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it's very bohemian down in Nashville. In fact, I'm having a hard time getting my driver's license, my Tennessee driver's license renewed because they're saying that where I live is actually not a house. So I have to address that, I guess.
Literally and figuratively,
yeah. Oh, yeah, there you go. So, but yeah, it's funny because I think it started with a drive. I'm on my second engine on a 5-year-old Jeep, and I have hundreds of thousands of miles on it. And even though, you know, Monica drives with me a lot, Monica and Winnie, I tend to, even though they fly a lot too, you know, but I tend to drive because I've usually got, you know, 10 guitar cases in here, and all my studio basically moves with me, you know, between these different locations. I kind of work in all the places I go. And so it's just sort of become a part of my thing, you know. I almost feel like that my Jeep is one of my addresses, oddly enough. So
yeah. How many miles does it actually have on it?
Right now I've got I think 220,000 miles on it.
Okay.
So and it's funny that, you know, this whole thing that I've been doing with Fretboard Journal, and by the way, it's running right now because it's a little warm here. So, but I'm doing the alternate side parking thing, and that's kind of how this whole thing came up with me reading Fretboard Journal. So I think it's sort of funny that you're calling me today, to do this, and I'm in my Jeep.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to the podcast. I want to talk to you. Folks may not know you are an artist. I don't know how to describe you. You've done...
I don't either.
I mean, I feel like when I first met you in Nashville, thanks to our mutual friend, Grant Big Smokey Johnson, who's done some writing for us, like you maybe were fresh out of New York City, where maybe you were known for sort of, and forgive me if I'm botching this, like these... impressionistic kind of New York City skyline paintings, maybe? Is that correct?
Yeah, I was a postmodern impressionist is what the moniker that was hung on me, and I moved to New York to study classical painting technique about, God, I don't know, maybe 30 years ago.
Okay.
And you know, I'd grown up in this small town, and I'd gone to a couple of different art schools, and cartooning was always sort of my natural state, but I wanted to, like, learn how to paint. And so I studied at the Art Students League with David LaFell, who's, like, considered a master. And I'd been doing that for maybe a year or two. And I just really got frustrated because, you know, I was painting very realistically, and the art scene was very different than the way I was painting. But I didn't want to change the way I was working to you know, accommodate the market. So I mentioned to my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, by the way, but I mentioned to her that I was going to try to get a job as a cartoonist and just to make some money and give painting a break. And that break lasted about 12 years because I went right to work doing cartooning work for a company that was being farmed out Disney work. And then from there, I became an art director in a similar company. And then somebody mentioned, asked me if I knew how to work on a computer. I said, no, not even sure I've ever seen one. And about a week later, I took all my savings, bought my first computer, and then for the next 12 years, I owned and ran three multimedia companies.
All right.
And yeah, and so then, and it was, you know, basically cartooning and online animation, gaming. My company did the first virtual tours of places like the Museum of Natural History, and the Navy was one of my big clients. So it was trippy and fun. And then, you know, I got, you know, just sort of burnt out on that. And, just sort of over the course of a couple of months went back to painting full time. And once I did that, you know, I landed a great art dealer, George Billis in New York, and, was kind of off to the races, you know? And so Gibson, the way the guitar thing started up was, they had approached me about painting one of my New York City paintings on a guitar, and I wasn't interested in doing that. But I said, you know what, I'll mess with the guitar, because I was always messing with stuff and altering things, and, you know, it was kind of nobybody really saw that kind of stuff I was doing, you know, like I customized my own motorcycles and things like that, but it was very off the radar because is this a long answer?
No, I love it. Keep going.
I'm at AA or something. So, yeah, because I have to remind myself because I can't keep track of it. So what they did was they sent me a guitar that I was supposed to make, you know, like a New York themed guitar. And when the guitar arrived in the raw, you know, no finish or anything, I decided to make it look like a musket instead. And so I carved it. I took all the plastic off. I replaced it with bone, scrimshawed it, and made a powder horn to go with it. So
did they know you were going to do this, or they just thought they were going to get a paint job?
No, they thought. So I got down there and I was like, you know, about that New York City guitar, I kind of made it like a musket. And so, you know, they took me over to meet Henry Juskowitz, and that was it. You know, they were like, I was supposed to be in Nashville 3 weeks, and I've been there for 6 years. And so what happened was I wasn't looking for a job, you know, I was done with jobs. And so we came up with the idea of doing artist in residence. And so I was there for a year. I think I did maybe 10 or 12 customized, guitars for them. And then, you know, I was kind of ready to move on, but I wasn't ready to leave Nashville. And so then I did a similar thing for Tom Bedell, who's a great guy who you know.
Sure.
And from there, I don't know, man. I just do a little bit of everything. I mean, you know, I was basically artist in residence with Zach Brown for a year. Zach and I are good friends now, but I mean, the stuff I've done, like would do for Zach, is so across the board. I wouldn't know how to describe it. I mean, I wrote two graphic novels and illustrated them for him. I've done the diorama at his in his recording studio of a mummy excavation site, and you know, I'm just all over the place. But I mean, it's just creative stuff, I guess. And I'm just going with the flow. You know, I've just finished my first music video for the Wood Brothers.
Nice.
And that was difficult, you know, partly because I decided to do half of it with puppets that I had to build and figure out how to work and It's just so I'm just I have a great time in Nashville. I absolutely love peripherally being in the music business, and you know I'm crazy about musicians. It's my Achilles heel because I worry way more about when I get approached by a musician. I'm way more interested in getting the job done than making it profitable. So I think unfortunately I tend to work to keep working. I'm not working to build a fortune, that's for sure. I'm working to keep making more work. So,
yeah. For folks who don't know what exactly we're talking about, you have an Instagram, which is just James A. Willis Artist, and they can kind of get a sense from that of at least some of this stuff. The Gibson chapter of your life. I mean, you must be the one guy Henry actually liked, because I know he's kind of a polarizing figure.
Yeah, and I continued to do stuff for him.
Okay,
you know, I mean, we didn't like part ways. I continued to do stuff for him.
That's
Rick Gimbar, who was running the custom shop at the time, who is not there now, and frankly, I mean, that to me was that's a loss that I can't quite get my head around. So whether or not I have a future with Gibson is, you know, I don't know.
Well, Gibson's whole future is kind of up in the air right now. But I'm just curious, where did those guitars end up? I mean, I saw a couple of them, and I have to say, I hate art guitars. I hate the guitars, what they wanted you to do, where they just, you know, somebody throws a paint job on it. Yours did look like a tricked out motorcycle, like everything was functional.
Yeah. And they never asked me to do, there was never any, will you do this, will you do that? I had 100% total free reign with them. And yeah, and I'm with you. I mean, I've been asked many, many times to do stuff to people's guitars, and I, across the board, say no. The only reason that it worked for me was that what I did to the guitars, right out of the chute, I said, look, I'm going to do this to this guitar, but then I'm going to hand this guitar to the best guitar player I know. And if he says it's not one of the best playing guitars he's ever played, I swear I'm going to smash it. And I think the look on my face was, you know, believable, because they were great, great, great sounding and great playing guitars. But, I'm with you, and my feeling was, since I started from scratch and since the guys were speccing these things out to me, and they never were existing guitars before I got them. So in my mind, I haven't taken a Les Paul from the world. I've added something new, and whether you like it or not, you know, I mean, I'm happy when people like it. I guess it bothers me on some level when they don't like it, but I really don't give a crap why in either case. So my main goal was just to defend myself by saying, no, I didn't destroy a guitar. This was never a guitar.
Yeah.
This is a new thing, you know? It's funny. I've got a friend up here in New York, relatively new friend from Cindy Guitars, that Carmen Street Guitars down in the village.
Yeah.
And she does some really, really crazy stuff to instruments. And she starts from scratch. And, you know, it's one of those things where you just, you know, you can't help but like it. It's so easy to hate what's been done to, like, overdone guitars, you know. But she pumps it through the roof, and it's like, so it can work. I think it can definitely work, you know.
And just to go back a bit, where did all the Gibson projects you did go? Or did they stay with the corporate brass or what?
You know, at first I think they didn't know what was going to happen. They were getting so much press, I think they decided to sit on them because they were just kind of using them as, you know, they wound up in a bunch of different shows, and they were kind of traveling around for a while. And then I know they sold one to somebody that you may or may not know. And I'm sorry to even put it like this, because I know who it is, but I'm not going to say. But then years later, a lot of the guitars I made for them, I made two. And I knew that this guy had gotten a hold of one, and actually the New York City Special guitar, the one that the second guitar I did for him, actually did kind of reflect New York in a way. And I had a second one, and he wound up acquiring that one. So the only person that I know who actually owns one owns two.
Okay.
But the other ones, I don't know. I really don't know. I think the bulk of them are still with Gibson. But I know a few. I know there are a few of them in the world because I've crossed paths with them. Actually, again, I know you can hit the edit button if my answers get too long because I'm.
I'll never do that though.
So, listen, man. When I do my podcast, I'll edit out 30 minutes of my. The thing that my podcast has taught me is that all I do is talk over my guests the whole time, and they don't seem to mind. So whatever. But I guess in this case, it's okay if I do it because you're asking me questions.
Yeah.
I don't have to have the guilt over. In fact, I don't even know. Oh yeah, I know. There's one story about one of those custom guitars that's like freaky, man. I can't even believe it. So it was a Flying V I did. I did a couple of guitars for him that were inspired by Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you've seen my bike. I built a motorcycle for Edgar Allan Poe once. And so I know it was sold to a big collector through New York. I don't know who he was, but then I know that he did like a bulk sell off of instruments, kind of like off the record kind of thing,
Sure.
Like maybe didn't want people to know he was selling them. And that guitar got caught up into that thing and was priced like a normal Flying V. And I got an email from a guy saying, dude, I think I just bought a forgery of one of your guitars. And I'm like, what? And he sent it to me. I'm like, no, that's a guitar. And he's like, I can't even believe that I just saw this thing and I just bought it. And he bought it for, I think he got it for about $27,000 less than what I know it sold for before. And he's still afraid to tell anybody he has it. But yeah, so that, because they'd gotten up there, they were selling for, in the high 20s.
Sure.
Or more, which, takes them out of the hand of the real world. But, I do them like a piece of art, so, art's totally, there's no real value to any art. It's just who wants it and et cetera, et cetera. And there are plenty of people who don't have two nickels to rub together who also have some of my art. So, I don't feel like a total... I didn't set the price.
No, of course. For some reason, it's easy for me to wrap my head around, maybe because I've seen them, your creations for a electric that came in the Raw. But what are you doing for Bedell?
Well, with Tom, actually, really early on when he was kind of, I've kind of met Tom and Molly from Two Old Hippies, really early on in my visit to Nashville because I was living in the Gulch right across from their place. And so I'd kind of just become friendly with them. And then when I left Gibson, Tom was just getting started with his sustainable wood programs and all that really amazing stuff he's doing with guitars right now. And so I did a lot. In fact, I named the Earth Song guitar for Tom.
Okay.
So little things like just really creative kind of brainstorming with him, I think Tom's ideas I think he just used me as like a lens. He would have 50 ideas and he would be bouncing them off of me and I'd just kind of like sort of, blurt out the point of interest that he already had but just needed to focus it. So that's
guide.
What I did with Tom. And yeah, and then also right now, it's funny because TKL is manufacturing a case to my specs because of all the Saints cases, partially. But so there's a James A. Willis TKL case, and we're doing a limited edition right now of I think it's in the works, and I think it's going to work out. And I'm friends with them, so if it doesn't work out, no sweat. But Two Old Hippies is going to have a super short run of some cases that were manufactured to my spec that have really crazy dye sublimation type printing on the vinyl that I was in going to hand gold leaf, and it's going to be kind of, you know, kind of neat, I think. So that's what I'm doing right now with Tom. I know I'll do something in the future with Tom in terms of actually working on the guitar, but frankly, his guitars are so gorgeous. If I wound up doing something with Tom, I've done custom cases for him before and stuff like that, but the guitars are so beautiful. I mean, I don't really know if I could ever bring myself to touch one of them. You know, I don't think there's anything I could do to one of them to make them more gorgeous than they already are.
Got it.
So it's kind of like, you know, Rudy Penza in New York. Do you know Rudy?
Yeah, of course.
From Rudy's Gun. Yeah, well, you know, Rudy has been a great friend of mine since I moved to New York. The guitar that's sitting by my bed was a barter with Rudy for a painting about a year into my stay here. And we've been friends ever since. And there's a part of me that's always wanted to do something with Rudy on one of the Penza guitars. Mm-hmm. But those things are so gorgeous. I mean, I think that the Penza electric guitars are... I can't decide if I think they're the... I think they might be some of the most beautiful guitars that are being made right now by small builders. I mean, the Collings also are absolutely just drop dead gorgeous to me. So there are some things that I might would touch a case, but I don't think I could ever bring myself to touch a guitar. You know,
you just got to get them when they're raw and ugly.
I don't even know if I could do it then, because they're just, I don't know. I just know where they're headed. You know, they're just so gorgeous. They're understated, but just lush. You know.
So the Saints cases, and for folks who haven't seen this, we're not talking, well, I guess we could talk about regular Saints, but we're talking about Bob Dylan, Kris Kristofferson. I'm going to screw up. How many are you up to?
I was thinking about that this morning because I forget. Obviously, when I go to do the next one, I'm starting another one tonight, maybe, if my cases show up. I think I'm maybe at like 39 or 40 or something like that. And obviously, I've done many, many more cases than that, but the Saints are, you know, they get a number because basically if you want one of my Saints cases, you say, I really like this musician and I really like that musician, and that's as far as you go. You know, we don't talk about anything else. And I just let them flow, you know, so those get a number. I do a lot of cases where, you know, people get involved a little bit, but not too much, you know. It's I try to keep it. I'm trying to keep that stuff, even though I'm not sure how it's going to fit into the big picture of my work. But, I mean, when I do this stuff, I don't ever think about it as anything other than just another piece of art, so.
Those are, so you can commission one from you, or you can occasionally buy them at a store? Yeah.
Well, sometimes they're available in the store. Christy Carter has one in her shop right now, I think. And that's where the Saints, if it's not a commission, that's where they wind up, at Carter Vintage. I do other stuff that goes to other places, but, you know, that's where those wind up. And, that's what happens. People just, you know, they just kind of reach out to me, and I've got two in the queue right now. And then after that, you know, who knows what'll be next. But, you know, like I've done some things for like I did the custom cases for the Billy Gibson mm-hmm. model for Gibson. And that was the only time I'd ever done the same case multiple times, and it's also the last time. But I mean, what the hell, it's for Billy Gibbons, right? I'm gonna say no. So again, those started off as something that, you know, how, you know about my bone gloves, obviously.
Yeah.
Maybe. I think you do. Yeah. Well, you know, I won't sell those. And the only way to get one of my guitar cases painted, I painted on my guitar cases forever. The only way to get one was to have acquired one of my guitars or to, and I don't mean a custom guitar. I mean, just sometimes if, you know, like you bought one of my guitars, I probably would have painted on the case. And then Christy Carter talked me into, you know, to doing one for sale. And I, you know, kind of didn't really want to do it, but I did it. And then the, like the next day, Zach Brown bought, you know, 12 of them for his recording studio. And I was like, she's like, hey, this, you know, Zach Brown just bought 12 of those. I think my response was, no, hell no, he didn't. I'm not painting 12 of those. And that's where it started. And, you know, I mean, you know, it's a great thing because I got to meet Zach, and I've done some crazy, crazy stuff. And that guy's brain is like a vortex of wonder, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he thinks big, and he goes for it, and he doesn't pull any punches. And it's been a great experience. But, yeah. That's it. That's the story of the cases. It's weird to talk about my art without anybody being able to see it, I guess, because they're probably going like, what the hell are they talking about?
We'll put links to in the notes to so folks can find out. So for you said you're kind of working as an artist in residence for Zach these days. What does that mean? Are you kind of like his interior decorator? What does that mean?
Yeah. Well, yeah, but for his brain.
Oh, God.
Well, I'm, you know, yeah. And yeah, I mean, so like the way it worked out was that, well, and I'm not currently doing, I mean, I'm still, you know, I still work on individual projects with Zach. Like I just did a couple of custom surfboards for him. And, you know, I did a Chris Christopherson case for the, one of the Saints for the studio. And I know that Chris was in the studio this week, so hopefully he liked it. But when I did that with Zach, basically, we were working on more and more projects together, and you know, he was like, wow, man, you know, how can we, you know, take this to the next level? And so, you know, and I felt that way too. I mean, and he just has, you know, he just has this crazy creative engine set up in Atlanta, where he has, you know, the Nice Company, he's got the film company, he just has all these things going on. He's got the amazing camp for kids. It was all being built. And I was just doing so much work for him, we decided it would make sense that if I had, you know, had a room in the house on his property. And, you know, I'm describing it as artist in residence. I don't know what either one of us would describe it as, but basically I was just working on a million different things, and they were all for him. So I guess in the truest sense of the word, I was an artist in residence. I did a sketch for him as a joke one night in the studio for a character they were joking around about. And then that led to, how did this guy become this character? And I sketched that out. And then that led to me writing and illustrating a 35-page long graphic novel that's going to be in, it's going to come, it's actually going to be released separately, but it's also going to come in the album that his side band, Sir Roosevelt, is going to be putting out. After that, I wrote a second book for him. It was about his, it's kind of the lore of the camp that they have there, but it's all, you know, based in like the 1800s and had crazy characters and, you know, design, you know, just all over the place with him. Did that, designed a gate for the camp, paintings, custom cases, just all kinds of stuff, you know?
Amazing.
And it was, yeah, it was fun. Zach was usually when people work with me, they know what they've seen something I do and they like it and they go for it and they reach out to me about that. Zach brought me in and then just picked my brain for every single thing I could do. And even some stuff I had no idea, you know, that I could do. So it was a great experience for me as an artist. Pushed my limits for sure.
I bet. And how insane is that guitar collection of his?
I don't know if I could comment on it, but I still kind of have like heart pains over a few of them. Let's say. No, he's got great guitar, very sort of functional guitar collection in the sense that his guitars get played, and you know, this. I don't really feel like Zach probably had some guitars that should have been considered precious, but in my experience, it was like, you know, they were getting played, you know.
Good.
Yeah.
So your brushes with all these artists leads us to the next chapter, the one that's pertinent to the Fretboard Journal. You decided to start a podcast sort of about the Fretboard Journal.
Yeah.
sort of being the operative word.
Yeah, right. Well, you know, and that's what I'm saying. It's so funny that I'm sitting here in my Jeep doing this video because, you know, I was sitting in my Jeep. You have to do the alternate side parking thing in New York, you know, where it's like musical chairs for cars. You double park, and then you wait until the street sweeper goes by, and then everybody tries to dive into the available spaces, and there's always, like, one guy or two guys who don't make it. And it's very sad, you know, to see it happen. So what I do is I just, you know, right now I'm reading a book on biocentrism, which is very interesting. And so I was sitting in my car, and I was reading Fretboard Journal. I snapped a picture of it on the steering wheel, and I think you commented, "Don't read and drive." And that cracked me up so much that I felt like I had to come up with a snappy comeback, but I couldn't because you probably shouldn't read and drive. And so I joked that I was just going to read it, and I think you've kind of, you know, you didn't freak out enough to scare me off, and so I had literally no idea how to do a podcast. And I think if you listen to my podcast, the last one I did with Oliver Wood, I think we literally talked for 10 minutes before I hit the record button. So, I mean, that kind of stuff really happens, but, you know, I give a Fretboard Journal to a friend, I let them look through it, or if they already have it or something, and then they come in, and that's the launching pad for what we're going to talk about. And the plan was that I was going to have somebody read something from it, but the conversations are so unstructured that I'm afraid to touch it. And
our magazine doesn't translate well to the spoken word.
I think it would, and you know, I mean, I just haven't gotten there yet. You know, maybe if I start getting bored with, you know, listening to me talk over my guest, I'll read one or two of them. But yeah, and you know, Sam Lewis and I and his guitar player, we sang one of your articles. I don't know if you noticed that
or not.
Yeah, we didn't. I think it was. I think it's on my Instagram account. We actually just, instead of reading one, we sang one. They played along, and I sang it. So you might want to check that out.
All right, so, I will.
Who knows? Yeah.
So who else? Yeah. You mentioned Oliver Wood, which was a great episode. Who else can we look forward to, or do you want to keep that under wraps?
No, well, I've been Nikki Lane is somebody who's coming up. I'm going to talk to this girl that I mentioned, Cindy, the guitar builder in New York. I'm going to be talking to her. I've got, you know, it's really, the list, I hesitate to say it because I have so many people that I've talked to about it, and I don't know which order they're falling in. I don't want to suddenly have a bottleneck, because right now it's very natural. But Judy Blank is this musician that recorded at Southern Ground, who's, she's from Denmark, and I mean, you know, I don't think a lot of people are going to know who she is, but man, she's fascinating, you know, and, you know, it's just people, you know, kind of the people that come through my studio are the people that are sort of, you know, in the queue, you know. I mean, at some point, maybe I'll be able to get Zach to do it, but Zach and I have this funny thing going on where, like, I lived with Zach for a year. And there's no photograph of the two of us together. And he kind of was like, he would see somebody with a camera when I'd be there with him, and he was like, no. And I was like, come on. And so it became a game, I think, to him on some level. But I'm like, hey, Zach, come on, how about one picture? So I've heard through the grapevine that there are secret pictures of us, you know, working together. But, you know, apparently I'm not going to get to be privy with him. So who knows? Zach may, you know, grace me with a podcast guest appearance. But if it falls into the category of how there are no pictures of us together, who knows? Maybe not.
All right. So, regardless, yeah. I can't wait. We're going to start sharing these on our website. And it's called James A. Willis Reads the Fretboard Journal. And I'm a fan. Thank you. I'm flattered.
Well, listen, man. I love your magazine, and everybody does. I mean, it's just gorgeous, and it's cool. I love how you're evolving into the online world very seamlessly, I think. So
we're trying.
You know, yeah. Congratulations.
Thanks, man. All right, where are you off to now? You've somehow found the quietest block in all of New York City, I have to say. I haven't heard any streamers.
Yeah, I hear some coming. I've got her sealed up. I've got the travelers sealed up tight.
All
right. Right now, so. I don't know. I'm here for a little while. I'm headed to Nashville, and then I'll be in Nashville for a little while, and then Tybee, for a big chunk of the summer. But, yeah, working the whole time.
All right, James. Thanks so much for talking to us.
Okay.
It's been fun. Happy birthday.
Oh, yeah. Thank you, brother.
All right.